Welcome to lesson 22, how to afford help. At some point in your business journey, you're going to recognize that there's too much for you to do and not enough time in which to do it. You may already be at that point, but if not, just realize it's coming. The sooner you start planning for it, the sooner you'll be ready when that moment comes. The sooner you stop doing all the things, the sooner you're no longer the bottleneck in the business. Creating the right balance of systems and processes and finding the right people to fill your support team means you have real freedom in your business. You become a business owner instead of an employee in your own company. Now, hiring help doesn't always mean bringing on a full-time employee with benefits and holidays. I mean, it can at some point. But if you're in the early stages of growing your business, it can also look like hiring a housekeeper or a bookkeeper to take care of those things and get them off your plate. Or even asking a neighbor kid to help you with a task in exchange for a few dollars or for feeding them. Anytime you're asking for help, you're theoretically hiring someone to handle a task for you, even if you're not compensating them with cold, hard cash. I want you to think differently about hiring and asking for help. The challenge for most creative entrepreneurs lies in two areas. One, knowing exactly what kind of help you need, and two, finding the right person for the job. Person being a misnomer, because as you'll discover, it's not always about hiring a person. Beyond that, there are other considerations, like is this a long-term assignment or a short-term problem that needs to be resolved? Should you hire this person outright as a full or part-time employee, or can you manage this role in your company with an intern or a contract worker? Different regions have different rules, and we won't go into all those details because this lesson is about figuring out how to afford that help, not deciding which kind of hiring you're going to be doing. When you're at a point where the amount of work exceeds your capacity to get it done, you should also, hopefully, have a surplus of funds to get the help you need. If not, the first place I suggest looking is at your pricing. Let's say you've been charging $250 for a piece of jewelry that takes you 5 hours to make, but $50 of that is materials to make the piece. So if you're paying yourself according to the profit first rules, that means your real revenue for that piece is $200 because 50 of it is materials. And then 100 of that 200 is what you pay yourself as an owner. Okay, that leaves $60 for the operations expenses of the business, like payroll, websites, marketing, etc. Could you hire someone else to make that piece of jewelry for $60 or less? If it takes you 5 hours to make it, you're going to pay them $12 an hour for your $250 piece of jewelry. So if you can't hire somebody else to make that piece of jewelry for less than $60, you've got a pricing problem. Now, that's not exactly how it works, because in Profit First, the cost of hiring someone else to make the ring is part of the manufacturing costs. So let's look at it the right way through Profit First, which actually won't make you any happier. If you sell that piece for $250 and the materials are $50 and you hire somebody to make that ring for, let's say, $50, that means your real revenue is $150. And your owner pay, because you only get half, is $75. So you just took a pay cut. A big pay cut when you hire help. And that's why it's important to make sure that you've considered all your costs when you're pricing your offers. Okay, you need to price for scale, if that makes sense. And this isn't a lesson about pricing. We've talked about that before, but it's important. It's a very important consideration for you to keep in mind as your business starts to grow. If your pricing can't support your growth, then you need to adjust your pricing. Every time the minimum wage goes up here in the United States, McDonald's raises their prices across the board. Why? Because their labor costs went up. Their pricing has to adjust to reflect that. You can only absorb so much cost before you have to raise your rates. So get used to that idea now so that when you're ready to hire, your pricing is already at a place where you can comfortably afford to bring someone on. Now, there are other kinds of help too. Some things can just be automated, and there are lots of free or freemium tools to help you automate those repetitive tasks. A quick Google search will bring you plenty of free resources to help you manage your business. There's almost no reason to pay for most of your early automation tasks. Facebook has built-in social media scheduling with their Creator Studio. As I record this, you can create and schedule content for Facebook and Instagram without paying a dime to a third-party source. Same for YouTube. Other tools like Later will work for other social media platforms like Pinterest or Twitter. There is a time and a place to pay to upgrade those services. But if you're just starting out, now is not the time to be adding those costs to your operating expenses. Use the free resources that are available to you as much as possible so that you're not shelling out a bunch of money on overhead instead of growing the business. You need an extra set of hands in your business when you have work to do that can't be easily automated. The easiest places to start, however, may not always be inside your business. When I was knee-deep in building my direct selling business, I hired house cleaners to come twice a month to deep clean my home so that I didn't have to. It would take me an entire weekend to clean the house, and that's 2 weekends a month that I would never get back. For a couple $100, two people came, and in 4 hours twice a month, they'd have it done. So for $200, I got two of my weekends back, and they did all the work in a quarter of the time. Those 4 days got refocused on IPA, important personal activities, and income-producing activities, which we'll talk about in our next lesson. I also hired a nanny when my youngest was still a toddler. Having undistracted time to work while I knew my kid was being cared for was worth the investment for me. Is it worth it to you to make the investment at home to give you more time for doing your work? Only you can decide that. Now, I have a colleague with 4 kids. She hired a personal chef to prep meals for her family. The chef brings the food to the door a couple of times a week, and all she has to do is heat it up, and everybody has hot, healthy meals that she didn't have to slave over in a kitchen for hours. She doesn't even like being in the kitchen if she can avoid it. So this was great for her. It might sound luxurious or frivolous to you, but it was absolutely life-saving for her. It took her away from doing the stuff that drained her and helped her focus on being present with her kids when it was time to be with her kids and having time to work when it was time to work. Look around you. What are the tasks that drain you that would be a godsend to have someone else handle? If you don't have anybody at home willing or able to help, is it worth it to you to make that investment from your owner pay to have the peace of mind of knowing that it's handled so that you can do other things? If so, then make that investment happen. Find a way to make that investment happen. If the money's not there yet, I totally get it. It may mean asking for volunteers to help out, and getting volunteer help at home is way easier than getting volunteer help in your business. My son spends summer vacations with me, and because I was still working this summer, I asked him and my husband for extra help with the chores so that I could focus on my work and not have to use my energy on those things. Now, there was some grumbling, but when I pointed out the benefits and the value that they'd get from helping me so that I could be done with my work sooner and spend time with them, then they agreed. It's much easier to use volunteers in your home than it is to have volunteers in your business because some types of volunteerism in a company aren't legal. If you're getting unpaid labor, there may be taxable consequences. So again, be sure to check your local regulations if you're seeking volunteers. A common way to use volunteer help is in a barter type exchange. For example, when I have a new book coming out, I often ask for volunteers to read it and proof it for me or give me feedback. The exchange is that they get the contents of the book and I get fresh eyes that I need to look at the book. I have a colleague who asked for volunteers to help at her annual live event. So in exchange for a free seat at her event, they were tasked with helping to set up and prep for the activities or to rearrange the furniture in the room at different times during the event. In these types of exchanges, there's an agreed upon value exchange for the help being requested. In the United States, so long as it's an equal exchange, you should be fine from a tax standpoint. But, and you're going to hear me say this a lot, check with your local taxing authorities to be sure, because the rules change all the time. And I don't want to see you getting caught in something just because you didn't do your homework. Interns are another type of low-cost labor. Unpaid internships are common, and while I don't recommend them, there are benefits to using them, obviously cost being one of them. They're typically designed for students to gain on-job experience in their chosen profession or area of work so that they've got significant work experience before they graduate. It can also groom them for a position inside that company after graduation. Now, the downside is that interns are typically transient, meaning they're only there for a short period of time. And typically, they require some level of training in order to complete the tasks that you assign them. In fact, that's part of the United States definition of an intern, is that it actually inconveniences the business owner somewhat in order to train these people to do this work. And that's the trade-off, the inconvenience for the lower pay, right? But that's not how a lot of people use it. I won't get into that right now. It's one of the reasons why I do not subscribe to the idea of unpaid internships. This is also true of paid internships. And they're my preference. I mean, if you're going to use interns at all, pay them, because you'd have to pay somebody else. And eventually, unpaid internships may go away completely, depending on the laws. So if you're building your business on the backs of what essentially amounts to slave labor, at some point, the economics of your business are going to collapse. Oh, and I include you in that unpaid labor equation. If your business is profitable on paper, but it can't afford to pay you a living wage, then it's not really profitable. You need to be paying yourself consistently. If you have the space in your budget, begin to set aside a portion of your operating expenses budget for staffing. Following Profit First, use no more than 5% of your real revenue. That's $5,000 a year if you're making six figures. That's a little over $400 a month, which is plenty for hiring a VA for a few hours each month. If you're making $10,000 or less, $500 a year gives you some money to hire help for maybe one important project, okay? Alternatively, you could delegate tasks that can help you make more than $500 and then use that extra money to pad your staffing fund. Depending on where you're hiring help, $500 is about 20 hours of VA help as I record this, more if you're hiring people overseas. So what could you do with an extra 2 hours each month or an extra 20 hours a year? Do you have a task or a project that you'd really like to get off the ground and it's going to take 20 hours of dedicated effort? This might be a way to do that. One last thought. When it comes to hiring a virtual assistant, there are plenty of online sites touting overseas help for your business. When you're just getting started, it makes sense to spend as little as possible to get the results you need to create stability. But often, you get what you pay for. And the ethics of paying too little for your help often come back to bite you in the end. So use common sense and compassion when you're hiring help. Exploitative hiring practices often result in a lot of bad karma. And I have countless stories I could share about people who are paying $1 or $2 an hour to somebody in some Southeast Asian country, and they're getting crappy output, but it's getting done, and then they have to go back and fix it later. Okay? I'm all for a minimum viable product, and I want quality, not crap. And so do your clients. So think about that when you're hiring. So your assignment is to review your list of tasks, both in your life and your work, to see what can be deleted, what could be automated, and what you'd eventually like to delegate. From there, select one or two tasks and figure out what has to happen to get them off your plate. Do you need to find an automated service? Do you need to hire somebody to deal with it? Or can you ask someone for some short-term help? Do you need to create a process document or a system so that someone else can run it? Figure out what the very next step is that will move you closer to offloading that task. Then take some action and document it. Be sure to celebrate the actions you're taking regardless of the outcome. Remember, this is about awareness. That makes all the difference in staying the course. In our next lesson, we're going to pick up the concept of IPA that I mentioned in this lesson and go deeper. How exactly do you define and adhere to your IPA? And how do they help you grow your business? How do you begin to do this delegation thing? That's what we'll discuss. And I will see you there.